Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2016 Home Education Conference, held in Ellicott City, Maryland.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Jeannie Faulkner, and this session is Engaged Homeschooling. Over 20 years ago, before I began homeschooling, I got into a conversation with a teacher about one of my kids. It was a teacher that he had in school. "He's a great kid," she said, "but he looks at his pencil a lot, and he doesn't pay attention." I asked my son about this, and he said, "Mom, I wonder if that pencil is made in a factory, like the factory where Papa works." Papa's what he calls the dad in our family, my husband. "Do you think that they build the pencil around the lead, or do you think that they put the lead in after they cut the rest of the pencil out of the wood?" Oh, he was paying attention all right, but he was not paying attention and engaging in what was going on in the classroom. You might say it was not engaging him. Now, this is not meant to start off as an indictment of schools right off the bat. We'll get into why schools have a difficult time with creating engagement. But it is meant to show that judgments about whether a child is paying attention are very subjective. Sometimes kids are engaged. It's just not what someone with authority over them wants them to be engaged with. My goal in this session is to help us recognize and create engagement in our homeschooling families, to help make it a habit, a way of being, so that a kid with my son's sense of wonder about a pencil can be brought to bear in all kinds of learning. That's how we get to the point of learning how to learn, which is what we hear so often stated as the goal of homeschooling. Because if you learn how to learn, you can really do anything. So the first question is, how do we recognize engagement? Basically, we know it when we see it, right? There's a school kind of way of thinking about engagement, and I quoted in your handout for you what Ben Johnson, who's a school principal, says about engagement. And this is from an article. He says, "It is when kids are paying attention, they're tracking with their eyes, they look alert, they're taking notes, they're listening as opposed to chatting or sleeping, they're asking questions, they're responding to questions, they're following requests." I have some doubts about that. And that they're reacting. Those are some signs of engagement in the classroom. That's when it's teacher-directed, almost like what we're doing here, right? In student-directed learning in groups, you'll also see kids reading critically, sometimes taking notes. They'll be writing in order to learn. They'll be discussing, debating, asking questions if they're in a student group instead of just being lectured to with a lesson presented to them. They may be performing or presenting or inquiring, exploring, so forth. And they're interacting. They're doing stuff with other students, and that's what we call engagement. But I see a lot of other kinds of engagement in homeschooled kids that you probably see too, or you're seeing glimmers of. One of those things is practicing without being prodded. Now, this is not to say that some of us who have kids who are involved in things that require practice don't also give reminders and help them manage practice time, and that can be an important part of the formula. But honestly, my child who is a musician, a really good musician, I've never told him to practice ever, once, never. He practices without prodding. Another thing is working on things at the edges of their ability. An engaged child will choose hard things to do where they can't quite do it, but it's in reach because they're trying to stretch themselves. That's a sign of engagement. And sometimes as parents, we're thinking, why are you doing something that's so difficult? It would be so easy for you to do this, but the easy thing doesn't engage that child. And sometimes it's frustrating because, say, they're in a co-op or a class and it does have grades, and you think that would be an easy A for you, but they're not interested in the easy because it's not as engaging. Another thing is requesting more opportunities. You know, Mom, can you find me a way to do this? That's a sign of being engaged in a subject. Also, wanting to learn from people other than Mom. Now, that can be frustrating sometimes because sometimes we think, oh, that's going to cost more, or they just don't want to work for me because I'm the mom. But sometimes it actually means I like what we're doing so much. I like this topic that I want additional feedback. I want a coach from another point of view. My son, who was learning languages, wanted to hear from many different teachers because it helped him learning about accents and different places where different languages were spoken. So it can make a difference that way. Creating original material. We don't hear too much about this in the school world until, really almost until graduate school, sometimes in some colleges. But at home, we hear a lot about it. When a kid is making art about the story that you read, when a kid is doing the choreography for a dance, that's a creation. That child is engaged. Anytime you're creating original music, creating an original story, original piece of writing, doing scientific creation, where you're doing experiments and trying to learn new things, coding, doing technology, you're creating something sort of out of nothing when you're writing code. When you're making video games using Scratch or some other thing, you're creating original material. It's an opportunity that we can give our kids who are homeschooling, and it shows that they are engaged. How about achieving flow? That's probably happened for most of us in some form or another. I think it's kind of commonly thought of as a sports thing. You know, you think about the basketball player who gets the hot hand and kind of can't miss. And when you talk to the basketball player after the game, she says, well, you know, I was really in the zone. Time didn't seem to be passing. I was in flow. It's a flow state. But we can also have it doing handwork or cleaning stalls at the barn or wherever, where we're really engaged with what we're doing and time just is passing without us really being aware of it. That's engagement. Again, not something we associate with school necessarily, but it can be strongly associated with learning. Related to that, learning outside of designated student environments. Being on the athletic field and being really engaged in a practice, being in a band and being really engaged in the piece of music that you're working on, in places other than what looks like a learning situation. At your house, maybe you have a specific, you know, like a specific homeschool room, or you homeschool mostly at the kitchen table or whatever. You may see engagement going on there, but you may also see engagement in the backyard when the kids are playing with the sidewalk chalk and they're doing something on the sidewalk and you realize, oh my goodness, she's just labeled all the parking spaces and this is writing that, you know, I've been trying to get her to do at the kitchen table, but now she's engaged. That stuff counts. That's engagement. We need to be able to recognize it. So play is a very important aspect of engagement, and it often gets discounted. Especially now, especially for young children, we've really gotten to a place as a society where we value early academics really strongly, and it's gotten pushed down from 7 to 6 to 5 to 4 to 3. I get calls and emails all the time. What is the best curriculum for my 3-year-old? Play. Imagination. You know, it's actually now we're seeing studies come out that show that early formal lessons are associated with lower achievement past fourth grade. because we can burn them out early. But we don't have to do that. We can let play be a source of engagement in our kids. And we have to recognize it. So how, as parents, if we want to be an engaged homeschooling parent, what kinds of things can we do? Allow engagement to develop. Now, allow is a really strange verb because it feels so passive, like I'm just going to sit there. But that sidewalk chalk thing probably wouldn't have happened if I'd scheduled every minute of that day so that the child didn't have a chance to go out and play and be with the sidewalk chalk and use some of what she's learned and become engaged that day. So allowing engagement means providing time. I used to say that because my kids all liked different activities and we did a lot of activities and I'm an extrovert so I like to go places and do things, I had to schedule unscheduled time. But it worked because it allowed my kids to have time for engagement, and being engaged is important. You also want to stimulate engagement, kind of the opposite of allowing. You know, what are some of the inputs you can put in? How can you feed that? What can you put out there for your kids to draw more from? It's not just a matter of letting things happen, it's also input. We also want to recognize it, which we've already talked about. If you are constantly disrupting engagement because you don't recognize it for what it is, your child can't learn it, your child can't feel it, your child can't practice being highly focused and engaged. So it's important to recognize it. Capitalizing on it. Those of you who watch sports know that a lot of times, let's take football for example, if you get good field position, you're said to capitalize on it if you score. Well, engaged homeschooling is the same way. If you get everything set up, you want to capitalize on that focus that's been created and make something of it, instead of disrupting it to do something else because that's on your to-do list for the day. You also want to be an example of engagement. This is tough because we're very busy homeschooling parents, but our kids should see us getting involved in things that we are interested in and that are important to us, whether that be playing music or hiking or reading, writing, going to a poetry group, doing our own modifications to our computer, whatever it is, they need to see examples of engagement. So when you shortchange yourself by not giving yourself time to do interesting things, you're really shortchanging your kids because they're not seeing an example of somebody who's engaged in life, who's engaged in learning. Be an example and enjoy it. That's the other part. Enjoy engagement. Now, one of the tricks about engagement is that you can fake it. Some of you may be faking it now. Thank you. Some of you aren't because you laughed. That's good. You got the joke. Faking engagement is actually an important skill, and I specifically taught my kids that skill as well, and we'll get to that. But as parents, we must not mistake fake engagement for the real thing. You can look like you're paying attention and not be engaged. And it is important because it's polite sometimes to not interrupt people. It's also important because if you want to get a job and you want to hold a job, sometimes there are times you need to look interested instead of looking at your pencil. So my son had to learn that task as well as how to maintain engagement. But we have to make sure that we don't mistake fake engagement for real engagement. Here's a little story. My kids went to an activity that was run by a local church in our community where a pastor was running the church, running the program in a small town. And it was, for some reason, a very boy-heavy group, and several of the boys were sketching and doing things during his session, and I was the helper. I was probably doing snacks or something, and he said to me after, those boys were not paying attention, they were drawing. And I said, I think they were really paying attention. I said, I think they were using drawing to keep themselves, you know, on task so that they wouldn't be disruptive. And actually, if you look up stuff about doodling and paying attention, yeah, I see some of you read that, some heads are nodding. Doodling actually increases the amount of engagement and the amount of stuff you remember. So he tried it his way the next week. It was a weekly thing that he did. And he said, okay, no, you know, we're not having any of that stuff on top of the desk. We're not doing that. I want you guys to pay attention to me. Well, you can only imagine what happened. He had just a terrible result because the kids couldn't control themselves because there was now nothing for them to do to stay engaged except for to poke each other. They couldn't listen to him as well because even though he thought they could look more engaged, they actually couldn't be as engaged. So we have to be careful about that. After that, we had a little meeting, and he said, clearly, you know more about little boys than I do. And he said, what do you suggest? And I said, I suggest we give them all Play-Doh and let them. And he said, that just seems so wrong, seems so weird, it seems disrespectful to me. I said, well, you know, they're 9, and when they're 14, we wouldn't want them to be doing this. But I think, and the next week, of course, with the Play-Doh, he got to do his program with much less disturbance. So we ran a little experiment. Make sure that you run yours and realize that fake engagement is not going to work as well as real engagement. So children can display signs of paying attention. These are called attending behaviors, but not necessarily be learning. Attending behaviors are partly developmental, too, as we get better. I tell you what, do this for me. I know some of you are holding stuff on your lap, but everybody put one hand under your leg. Just everybody, just you know, while you're sitting there, one hand under your leg. Now, just stay like that for a while. Now, while we talk, don't move your hand. Stay right there, just like that. Developmentally and personality-wise, it can be really hard to think about, move your hand, it can be really hard to think about anything except for the thing that somebody's telling you you must do or you can't do. But as you get older, you all are pretty good at it. You can do it. But, you know, my little boys told to sit on their hands can't do anything but worry about where their hands are. Okay, you can take your hands out. But think when you're telling your kids to do something that you think creates the image of engagement, make sure you're not actually creating disengagement by that. My kids learned all the Greek myths while riding scooters around me in circles because I read them out loud and they listened to that. Now, I used to train horses, and so it was very comfortable for me to, you know, be the person in the center of the ring and tell everybody to go around. But, you know, it worked. And instead of creating a lack of engagement because they weren't paying attention, their busy boy bodies were taken up with the activity, and their brains were wide open. And it all sunk in. And as I said yesterday, I had like neighbor kids coming in and their moms are thinking something really weird is going on because she's got them all scootering in the parking lot. It was one of the good things about living in an apartment for a while. Big parking lot for scooters. So as kids get older, you can expect this amount of engagement and attention paying to change a little bit. But you want to give your kids the tools to developmentally engage at the level that's right for them. Now, it's much harder to do this in school. They're not big on scootering in the parking lot because chaos, right? Again, this is not an indictment on its own of school, it's the way school has been set up and executed for so long, it just doesn't work very well to use some of the same techniques that you are free to use because you homeschool. Standards-based approaches in schools do not lend themselves to engagement, because everybody has to learn the same thing the same way, and that doesn't engage everyone. Large class sizes don't lend themselves to engagement, because a lot of time engagement is sparked because I'm working with you, or I'm working with you, or I'm working with some special mentor, and one-on-one I can get somebody's attention, and it's much harder with a large class. Large classes can also have their disruptive kids and their kids at different levels and all that kind of stuff. It's very difficult for schools. Too academic, too early. I've mentioned this again or earlier, and to talk about it again, it's a lot of the tasks given to kids are not developmentally appropriate. We have now taken everything that we know about human being children and the way they learn and pretty much done the opposite as a society in school. Starting by looking at how much stuff you want kids to learn and dividing it by 13 years and putting part of it when they're five and part when they're six and part doesn't work, doesn't make any sense. So, but everything's gotten front-loaded, too academic, too early, and little kids can't engage in that. Remember I talked about how engagement occurs for some kids when they try something that's difficult for them but in reach? That's called the zone of proximal development. That's that space right there that is not too hard, but hard enough to be interesting. Well, when you front load early academics and you try to get a 4- and 5-year-old to read, some will read, but many will not read. It's too far away from their zone of proximal development. They're simply not ready. And they will, in many cases in homeschooling families, as you've heard or observed in your own family, at 8, they'll learn to read instantly and without all that head banging in the wall. So too academic, too early. A lack of student autonomy. Again, if you have 30 kids in a room, you can't let everybody have a lot of autonomy or you will have all kinds of trouble. So again, not an indictment against school, just a limitation of the medium of school. But we can let our homeschooled kids have a lot more autonomy without it disrupting what we're trying to do. A lack of support for vocational learning in school. School sees a very narrow set of things that are considered traditionally academic. And that is what school values, and it does not value a lot of vocational type of things. We can do that with our kids. We can do it with our kids who are going to college and our kids who aren't going to college. Using tools, folks, is a way of turning on the brain, whether those be crafting tools, hammers and saws, technology. Using tools turns on the brain, and we can do that in our homeschools in ways that schools literally keep kids away from tools. Vocational learning is something we're seeing a little bit of a comeback in some states for vocational learning, but mostly it's still sort of a, if you're doing vocational stuff, then it's, you know, a negative track. It's not seen as high status, and there's not as much funding for it, and so forth. A lack of parent involvement, in some cases because parents don't want to be involved, in other cases because they won't let parents be involved. Suppression of teacher initiative. All of this sounds like, I don't like teachers. My mom was a teacher. My mother-in-law was a teacher and a school principal. I have a lot of good friends who are teachers who are homeschooling their own kids, and one of the reasons they say is this right here. They weren't allowed to do the things that engage their kids in their classroom, and they got so frustrated because they were given scripted lessons and told, no, you can't do that. One of my kids' teachers, before I took my kids out of school decades ago, said to me, I know exactly what he needs, and I'm not allowed to do it. That's strange. She was a master teacher. Everybody knew it. I was blessed that my child had that teacher in that school that year. But she was not allowed to do what she knew would engage my pencil-staring child. And she did a lot of other things to do things the best that she could to make sure that the class was as good as it could be, but she faced all of these problems in doing that. And then, of course, we have corporate and political agendas for schools that can interfere because engagement isn't the goal. So we could do a whole separate session on that. We won't go there today. So what it really comes down to is, given all this, you've got a different situation. How can you create engagement at your house? The way you do that is by asking yourself questions and then responding actively to those questions. Look at what things naturally engage my child. What things does he naturally want to do? You already know those. Think of them right now. Each child, you know what those things are. Do more of those things. After you identify them, give that child more time and more tools to do more of those things. Which brings us to the second one, what environment can I do to use to stimulate that engagement? You know what naturally draws your child to be engaged. Now, how can you make the most of that? You can create an environment for engagement by extending it, maybe providing additional instruction, maybe helping your child raise money in order to have more supplies, maybe giving more supplies from the family budget, finding ways to put things in the child's environment to create more stimulation. You can also do this around the things that are not your child's passion or interest, so that if I, as a mom, have an agenda that I need my child to do this from a certain curriculum or a certain way, you can look at, is this what I'm doing the only way to present this information or idea? Is there a different way? For example, have any of you ever had trouble with your kids learning multiplication tables? Yeah. Okay, lots of us have had that trouble. You can drill, 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 flashcards on and on and on. And if your child is glazing over, it's not helping. So you can look at a lot of different ways to help a child with multiplication tables. Mainly playing games, right? You can play card games, you can play Yahtzee, you can do other kinds of things. I mean, Yahtzee is a great one because to figure out their score, they have to multiply the results of the dice, all kinds of things. Think of alternate ways to do things that aren't necessarily the drill way or the school way that will be more engaging. You might have a child that likes that. For my kids in multiplication, just this is too specific for the talk really, but just to give you an example, we played a card game called that I made up called Multiplication War, where it's just playing war, but when you turn over the card, like if you turn over an 8 and I turn over a 2, you win, but you have to say 8 times 2 is 16 in order to take up the... But I let my kids have the multiplication table printed out right there beside them until they didn't need it anymore, because the practice of looking at and saying 8 times 2 is 16, and my kids were strangely competitive, and they were highly motivated to play, to win that hand, to play that game, to say that. We did the same thing shooting baskets, playing a version of horse, you know, only they had to say a multiplication problem to get credit. So none of them were particularly interested in learning multiplication tables, but I was able to make it more engaging by creating a more stimulating environment. If your child is engaged in something, how can you extend the engagement? It's really important not to interrupt. They're doing good stuff a lot of times. And we go out there and say, it's time to do grammar. It might not be time to do grammar. It might be time to let them extend that. It might be time to take them a snack in the sandbox, because what they're doing is designing a road system that's very related to the map of ancient Rome that they've been working on in social studies. But time to do grammar chops that right in half. Look for ways to extend the engagement. And make sure, you see this one keep coming up? Am I recognizing it? I've tried to put it in everywhere because am I recognizing engagement when it occurs? Remember that a lot of times they're engaged in things that we don't appreciate, and so we don't think it's engagement. Minecraft. They care about this a lot, the kids that are into Minecraft and who are allowed, you know, I know some of you may not have video games in your home, and that's certainly a choice that you can make too, but some who have those tools in their home realize that their kids can get really engaged. And if we can help them find ways to do some of their work within the frame of mind. I mean, did you know you can build the Parthenon in Minecraft? You can actually make computer code that operates in Minecraft. I mean, it's a cool thing. But if we dismiss it because the video game is not valuable, we may miss recognizing engagement. And again, your family culture may be that you don't want to emphasize that, and I respect that. That's a choice that you have to decide, and it may be developmentally related for your kids, for your family. Again, with the modeling engagement in my own life. And the hard one is, how can I get rid of things that block or reduce engagement? And that's what is the crux of this for many of us. We have a lot of must-dos, have-to-dos, gotta-dos, gotta do it this way. And it doesn't seem to matter to us that it's not working. Now, here's my secret in the next slide. I have two rules for homeschooling. Do what works. Stop doing what doesn't work. Very hard to do. A lot of times we have paid a lot of money for something that doesn't work, and we just keep thinking that if we do it harder, more, longer, better, that somehow it will magically start working. And yes, sometimes we can tweak it and do get better at using a certain resource, but sometimes it's a bad fit, and it doesn't matter that we paid a lot of money for it. It doesn't matter that we put a lot of time into looking for it. It doesn't matter that we've put a lot of time into trying to learn to use it. It doesn't work. Stop doing it. It doesn't work. Do what works. Now, if you can't tell, let me give you a little hint. If anybody is crying about it, including you, it may not be working. Now, caveat to this, sometimes you have a crying day, a kid has a crying day, and they need a little push. I'm not talking about, you know, just abandon everything. You can already tell you know me better than that, even though we just know each other from this. I'm not talking about, you know, giving up when a couple days of pushing and getting used to things and orienting is going to help it. I'm talking about, you know, when in your gut you're like, oh, rats, this really isn't going to work. He's crying every day. I'm crying. It's not working. Stop it. Get rid of the things that are blocking engagement, because it's wasted time. You could be doing good things during that time. Instead, you're trying to show your child that he must persist and get through this thing. Let me ask you, has everything in your life always worked where the key to it has been to persist? No, sometimes we have to have the wisdom to walk away from things. There are some bad things that we need to walk away from. It's not always good to hang in there and persevere through bad things, things that don't fit, things that feel wrong, things that don't engage us. It is also a skill for us to demonstrate to our children that sometimes you say, this isn't working. Let's change. Let's be flexible. Now, if you read much of, I do a lot of writing at The Homeschool Mom, and a lot of times it comes up from stuff that I see on Facebook, people posting. And so last year, on October 1st, I declared it Curriculum's Not Working Day, and you might have read an article about that. And because it's in October, especially people who've only been homeschooling a year or two, and they go, this curriculum that I picked out is not working, and everybody on Facebook and on Yahoo groups and all that, everybody at homeschool park days are saying, it's not working. That's right. Now it's time to change stuff. You're in charge. You don't have a classroom. You don't have all those reasons that you can't have engagement. You are in charge. I am homeschool mom. Hear me roar. Let's change stuff. Do what works, right? So the question becomes, what can you do to create more engagement? You can actually use specific tools of engagement, and we're going to talk about a few of them, but I put many more of them in your handout. And you can go home and look at those, and you can also add your own. But you've all read the education quote about education is not filling the bucket, it's lighting the fire. This is what we're talking about. What tools can kindle the fire of engagement? So here are a few that I picked out. Your list is bigger, but PowerPoint works in a way that the more you put on there, the less engaging it is. So my number one thing is interests. Go with your kids' interests. And this can be, you know, if you're a traditional curriculum user and you love your curriculum and you're invested in it, it's very important to you and it has helped your kids do well, stick with your curriculum too. That's fine. But give your child time to pursue interest and find out ways to work the two together, because often there are ways to do that. In other cases, some of you may be at a point where, especially if you've taken a kid out of school, where curriculum just isn't working at all, and you may need to do something like homemade unit studies or more of an unschooling approach or deschooling for a while to try to get your kid to come back from being disengaged. Let me give you some examples from my life. One of my kids was not, especially coming right out of school, was not that interested in traditional academics. And so we did a lot of unit studies, and one of them was on dogs. He wanted to get a dog. And, some of my school friends who were watching me make this transition said, yeah, but you can't really make dogs your homeschool project. Oh, yes, you can. I said, well, you need to learn about what it takes to take care of a dog and what kind of dog might be best for our family. And so he checked out every book in the library and read all the dog books. Now, meanwhile, this was a child who was not a fluent reader in school, but suddenly he was engaged in this project. He also started volunteering at the animal shelter. And when he volunteered at the animal shelter, it was a very, very small, Greene County, Virginia, very, very, very small. And so he got to go in with another, actually, homeschool mom who volunteered there. And he got to do things like giving the animals vaccinations or assist with that and do a lot of physical care for animals that had health problems. So he started getting involved in the science of that, and also he got into understanding the problems of pet overpopulation and having a heart for trying to have pets have homes where people care about them and that kind of thing. Then he did pick out the kind of dog that he wanted to have, and we brought that dog home, and he attended dog training classes. And then this opened up a whole new set of things to read about. How do you train a dog? Watching videos. Then it sort of set a whole bunch of things into play about other things, like why do some dogs do well as herding animals, and other dogs do well as agility animals, and other dogs do well as hunters? And learning about the genetics of how humans manipulated dog breeds for specific, it was fantastic. He learned more in this non-school unit study that would not have been acceptable in school than he had learned in several years of school. Plus, he was engaged. He remembered what it felt like to be curious about something. He learned to do research. He learned to use the library. He learned all of those things. He did a similar thing with ice skating. He was an ice skater, and he was very interested in learning about the history of ice skating. All of a sudden, he started keeping a notebook on ice skating, and he was printing out articles, and I realized he knew stuff about Scandinavia and how the first ice skates were developed. And then he started learning about centrifugal force, because, you know, when you do spins and stuff, you have to, you know, you have to understand the dynamics of that. It was physics stuff that he wasn't getting any exposure to at all, but became very important to him. So using interest is important. Autonomy is another one, giving kids a lot of choice in what to do. I know we can't necessarily give them all choices about all things all the time, but there is a great deal of research out there that shows that all people, not just younger people, but all people function better when they have a greater amount of autonomy. We prefer to choose at least how we learn, even if it's not everything about what we learn. Learning styles, this is the one that we're most familiar with. This is the engagement one that people often say, okay, I understand what she means on this, because we know that some kids are more visual, some kids are more kinesthetic, some kids are more creative, some are more audio-oriented. Adapting the curriculum, the approach to homeschooling to your child's learning style will help. Using projects can really help. Some kids want to see things physically made and done, and that's okay. At young ages, and even on up, the projects will change, but I mean, building a treehouse and being engaged with what it took to build the treehouse might be more important than other aspects of learning for that particular child. You'll know whether that counts for your child. Service, very important. Doing service for others really kicks in a part of the brain that can understand better how other people live. It's empathy. It can be a driving force when kids see that not everybody is as privileged as their own family, then sometimes they can be engaged to learn to do something about that. Traditions, these can be big and small. Some of you may have heard of the concept of a morning basket, a tradition that small, where when you get up in the morning, you have your basket of books and your whatever your breakfast is, and maybe a candle lit. That small tradition is something that can be something that is engaging, that kids look forward to. Or it could be big traditions that for a long time, when my family was a little bit younger, every Labor Day we went canoeing. It was a way for me to get my older young adults and older teens sort of circling around the family again. So it's not an academic tradition, but it engages them in the family culture, which means they're also engaged in learning through the family. Mentors, we've talked about before. Sometimes somebody with greater expertise and somebody not mom can be a valuable, engaging resource. Doing experiments, both sort of social psychology type experiments and science experiments, can be much more engaging than just talking about scientific concepts. If you have one of those kids, you can use something like Robert Krampf. What is his, he's the science guy. What is his name? The Happy Scientist, thank you. The Happy Scientist, who shows his experiments. He's got a Facebook page, he's got a website, and you can subscribe to him and get more. But a kid who loves experiments will get more from doing the experiments and will learn those scientific concepts better than somebody who's told about them. Same thing for Mythbusters. You know, some of my most nervous moments as a mom would be when I'd say, guys, what are you all doing? Oh, we're doing Mythbusters stuff. You know, so they're out there testing whether the bridge will really hold up over the creek if, you know, but it's engaging and they're learning something from that. Here we have competition and non-competition, so both can be valuable. If you have a highly competitive kid, that can help you drive engagement because they want to beat their sister, or because they want to win the spelling bee, or because they want to have the best science fair project at your co-op, or because they want to make the special team in their sport, whatever it is. But some kids are not competitive, and some competitive kids need a break from it. So also setting up things that aren't competitive can have high value. So make sure that everything you do is not super competitive. Sports, fantastic way to engage kids. One of my kids was a very serious soccer player for a long time, and one day his coach talked to him about the scientific principle behind how you curve the ball when you kick it and put it in the goal. What is the action of how the foot strikes the ball? And he came home and looked up all about that physics principle and learned all about how to do it because he wanted to be able to execute it with that in the back of his mind. I have another friend whose kid is really into baseball, and she's totally done all of her geography, her U.S. geography, through baseball teams, because learn the team cities and learn about the cities and learn where the baseball stadiums are and what that city is known for. Been totally engaging for her son. So you can use sports in all kinds of unusual ways. I put music down here, but that's because that's what it's been in our family. I have at least one really good musician and a couple other musicians in my family. Doing music has meant that's where his writing has gone. He's done research. I'll listen to his songs that he's written and say, oh, that has literary allusions to Grimm's tales, for example, or the Greek myths that we read when he was scootering. How does he remember that? Because he was scootering. He was engaged. And now, as an older teen, it's in his writing that he's doing because he's writing songs, because it engages him. Field trips is another great one, except for when it's not. As I told the group yesterday, I had one kid who really strongly disliked field trips, and so I had to look for different ways to meet that need. It was unusual because, you know, a lot of kids are like, field trip Friday, great, no lessons, formal lessons, you know, so, but that can be, I think more kids like them than don't like them because it's kind of non-routine. Inquiry-based learning, if you don't know about this, Google it. It's where you learn about, you help your kids learn by asking questions instead of giving the answers. And it's where you help your kid learn through dialogue. And we were talking yesterday in one of the beginner sessions about academic rigor. And there was a husband, a dad, who was concerned that homeschooling did not have enough academic rigor as compared to school. And I think I got a little emotional because I don't find most school settings to provide academic rigor. There are some exceptions because there's some good schools and there may be some private schools that do that as well. But inquiry-based learning is academic rigor. When you ask kids questions and they have to think about their answers and then you say, that sounds like it's based on a stereotype. What do you really know about that group of people? Let's go look that up. And they have to challenge their beliefs by using inquiry-based methods, that's academic record, academic rigor. The last one I put on here is strewing. Strewing is an unschooling technique where you leave interesting things around for kids to find, and you set up their environment with interesting things so that they, you know, they may wake up in the morning or come back in the house and find out that, you know, there are a bunch, there's a windmill kit there for them to put together, or there are books about fossils and a magnifying glass just sitting on the coffee table, kind of strewing. This is a great way to get kids engaged and a way to give that input into their life instead of just allowing, but stimulating engagement to occur. Now, you can add your own, and you can also look at that bigger list in your handout. One of the things that's important for me to tell you, I want you to understand, is that this can work regardless of your homeschooling style, because different homeschooling styles have different cool things about them that are very engaging. So your style may be one of these things or one other one, but you can pull the good things and emphasize that. Classical homeschooling, all those Greek myths I read and a lot of the other books that my family has read, we didn't consider ourselves classical homeschooling, but it's very valuable content. And guess what? My kids liked valuable content. They preferred to spend their time reading good stuff than reading bad stuff. And so that aspect worked for us. We used a lot of narration, which is a Charlotte Mason aspect. The prepared environment, Montessori, if that's something you think would really help your child, read about Montessori and how they set up their classrooms and how Montessori homeschoolers set up their environments at home. Also, again, we talked about unschooling. It's big on strewing, like I mentioned. It's also big on autonomy. It can be scary to give kids a lot of choice, but it can be very valuable to give choice as much as you can, as much as you are personally comfortable with. It's not about throwing it all away. It's about finding ways that you can say yes within your value system that works for you. You can also, if some of you may use Thomas Jefferson education methods, mentoring is a very strong part of that. Remember that earlier in the list, that's part of engaged homeschooling? Unit studies are a great way. The dog unit study showed relevance to his own life. My child could learn to read and learn science and learn history all by doing unit studies. So no matter what your homeschooling style is, you can choose to emphasize the engaging aspects of that style or borrow from some others. Do your research to borrow from some other aspects of that. The key is to customize. Customize your homeschooling, your parenting, and the environment. These are some of the things you want to customize according to. How does your child learn? What are your child's interests? What is your child's activity level? Now, that's something we didn't talk about too much, but I had highly active boys. And then I had a highly, highly, highly active boy. Activity level had everything to do with how I tried to prepare engaging learning situations for my child. And then the child's developmental stage is very important. Is my child ready? If a child is not ready, there's no use continuing to try to do something past the point of readiness. And then the final thing is, how is my child responding? It's kind of back to the crying thing. Does my child want more or less? Is my child seeming spiritually and socially and academically and physically trending toward healthier outlooks, or still resistant and anxious and not wanting to participate? Is the engagement going up or down? Go back to the two rules. Do what works. Stop doing what doesn't work. It can take some courage, but it can work. Are there challenges to homeschooling for engagement? Oh yes, there will be challenges, no doubt about it. Not everything is rainbows and butterflies. How will they learn the hard stuff? This is the question I always get asked. By learning to engage, they have learned to learn, and then they can turn that on, the hard stuff. And what does that come down to? Hoop jumping and slogging. Everybody needs to know how to do it, and kids can learn how to do it. 7-year-old kids don't necessarily need to do this. 17-year-old kids better have been learning it for a little bit. Sometimes there are things we just have to do because we want to get into college or because we want to get a job or because we want to start our own business. We've got to jump the hoops. For my older kids, they learned this through scouting. It didn't have to be something that I did in my home every day that had to do with academics, but they learned it on the road to Eagle. And you may find that to be appropriate for you. Another one of my kids learned it through sports. You're not going to play elite sports for years and not have a coach make it very clear to you what hoops you got to jump and what mud you have to slog through. So sometimes hard stuff does have to be done. They are necessary, but they're not the most important thing in a young child who is not yet engaged in his work. Emphasizing process over product is key in helping kids get through hoop jumping and slogging. And also, you may need to learn to accept that not all hoops are for all kids, even when they're grown up. Just like not all hoops were ones that you wanted to jump through when you were 17 or 21 or 25. But I want to leave you with this thought, and that is, you can't make kids learn when they're not ready. Your task as a parent is to help them get ready. It's about engagement. Learning only happens when a child is interested. If he's not interested, it's like throwing marshmallows at his head and calling it eating. Thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.